Mr. Drake, reel 15. We're still talking about the Battle of Sedjenain, Mr. Drake, and you mentioned the arrival of the tanks.
Yes, well, apparently what we done when we went out on the decoy is we'd done the... it was successful in we'd heard the train come up during the night, before we got back, of course, and when we arrived back and was in the wood with the colonel, we realised that they'd been able to bring an echelon of tanks up. How that meant, how many it was, I don't know, but they said an echelon and a tank had arrived on the scene, so they were due to go in action, of course, the next morning. At the time next morning arrived, everybody had seemed to have disappeared from some unknown reason, and I was left with a few fellas, and we was at a point just on the west side of Sedjenain, on the bottom side of it, if you like, and there was a tunnel there. So we was assembled, the few of us, round the tunnel, and I always remember Sergeant Sergeant with the mortar, the Sergeant of the Mortar Platoon, Sergeant Henderson his name was, and I remember him, he was there. I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "Firing in the general direction," he says, "or north of Sedjenain, where the advancing Germans were coming down the main road, not actually on the main road, but on the approaches to Sedjenain in the woods and cover, which were on each side, more or less." So he was firing in the general direction, and I always remembered he was bandaged on one arm, so he'd been injured somewhere or another, but he was still there, and he was still loading the guns. So he says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "There's nobody about." I said, "I'm going to go behind the tanks," I said, "because I know where there's a German big gun emplaced." He says, "It's just north of the town towards Bezerta." I says, "And he's in the bushes there," I says, "so I can guide the tank commander to know just exactly where he is." So I went up with the first tank and a couple of fellas with me, and I was in sort of side of the tank near the track, and I informed the tank commander to just go to the corner. There was a slight bend in the road, and I said, "Whatever you do, stop this side of the corner and then lower your turret," I says, "because he's right bang in front of you on the right hand side of the road in the bushes," I says, "and he's an anti-tank gun there," I says, "it's certainly a big gun, it might be a 6-pounder or something like that." So sure enough, he got back into the tank and the tank moved forward, and I was on the side, walking on the near side of it, the right hand side, that is the driver's side, and I'm walking up with it, and he stopped, but he stopped a little bit too far round the corner, and only thing I saw was the front lift up and the driver head popped up, and as his head popped up, a shell hit it. It took his head clean off, splattered all his brains all the way around the side of the tank, and I could see them twitching on the side of the tank. What a sight. Terrible. No sooner had that happened that somebody got in and lifted him out of the tank, threw him on the side of the road, and reversed the tank back. So they knew exactly then what to do. So they came forward again, And of course they had the turret down and they knew the position they were going to be in, and I heard one blast and I think that's all I heard. But there was nothing much we could do, so I says, come on lads, we'll go back, it's time we had a bit of a rest. So we went back into the tunnel and as I say, Sergeant Edgerton was still there, and we went back into the tunnel and with no officers, and didn't see many officers about, I don't know where everybody got to, so I said, well, after we'd had a, we probably stayed in the tunnel for a couple of hours while the battle was going on, we knew there was gunfire all the way around, backwards and forwards, and the Germans were shelling the road, the main road back. So I says, well, we better met his tracks back. I says, there's no we can seem to do here. I believe there was some of the foresters were still there, and I said, we better make his tracks back and see what's happening. So we avoided the road, we kept clear of the road, and we went back on the south side of the road where there's always a bit of cover and a few bushes here and there. And as we were walking back slowly, we weren't in any rush, we were walking back, and suddenly from out of Sedgenin I saw a carrier coming. So I thought, oh, that must be one of ours. So I dashed across up to the road, put my hand up, and I could see the red tapes. I thought, this is a brigadier, this. So sure enough, he stopped. So I says, I want to know what's happening. So then he informed me that the guards had dug in behind and they were retreating to behind the guards. So I says, well, you better be careful down here. I says, he's shelling that road all the way down. He says, oh, I think we'll get through between the shells, like, it'll be fortunate if we get it. So off he went. I came back to the men and we made his way back and got behind the guards, and we met up with Lieutenant Lax and a few more of our own lot. So we were back in commission again, and one or two more had turned up. So we were then, it was a matter of reforming. So a few reinforcements came up, and we cleaned ourselves up and as best we could, and we were there for a day or two and sort of sorting ourselves out, and we went on one parade, and it was then that it was announced on the parade that I'd been awarded the military medal. So I always remember Sergeant Dunn shouting out, good old Joe! So...
Could you just describe that parade, about how many men were on it?
Oh, there'd be about 30 men, I should imagine, on that parade. We'd accumulated one or two more from what had been sent up from the backward areas, I would say. You know, they'd been sent up to reinforce us. So there was from different, as far as I know, they were from different regiments, but they were mostly, of course, were his own DLI fellas from different companies and what have you. So
so who was going around, who was actually organising the rebuilding of the battalion?
Well, the colonel was there, so he had everything under command, and he was on the parade and announced that had got the military medal, and after the parade was dismissed, we came back and got together as best we could. We had a few I think there were a few tents and things like that where we could get into. And Lieutenant Lax come to me and said, the Colonel wants to see you 9 o'clock in the morning, so or later that afternoon, I think it was, morning. And so I went to the Colonel's tent and we had quite a bit of conversation, and he said he'd like to recommend me to be an officer, but it would entail that I would leave, I would have to go up to Cairo and go to the OTC there at Cairo. But he assured me that I would be at least a full lieutenant after I'd been there. And then he says, you'll get posted, I don't know where to. So he says, what do you think? And I said, well, give me a little time to think it over. So he says, righto. So I came away and I went to one or two of the lads and explained, and I decided, well, I thought the cost is going to be something, what we buy in your uniform and that, and all the costs that might be involved seemed to go through my mind. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to leave the company I was in, who I'd been with right away through all the army career I'd been in. And so I went back and informed him that I'd decided to stay. I didn't want to leave the battalion, I didn't want to leave the company. So that was the end of that. Oh, the next morning we got Lieutenant Lax came down and said that, and I think that's when he got his promotion to a captain. I think he was promoted to captain. I looked upon him as a captain then, for some unknown reason. I must have got a whiff. But anyway, he said we were taking a patrol out to into the country and to contact the number one commandos. So automatically I started getting dressed and got the carriers ready, and he says, don't you go, Joe. He says, you've had enough for a bit. He says, it's only a patrol. He says, have a rest, he says, and I'll go up and we'll be back. It's only a day's job sort of thing. We'll go up and go back. And so he persuaded me to stay. So I did, and he went off with the section and to contact the number one commandos, who was over on his right, or that's what the information we had. However, he didn't come back nightfall, and he still hadn't come back. So next morning, we had the orders to, I don't know who gave us the orders, but I automatically got ready, and we took another section of carriers and went in the direction that we'd been informed, and went to see, in fact, tried to find out what had happened and see what had happened to the number one commandos. However, we got to so far up one of the hills towards a farmstead with some woods on his left-hand side of the track we were going up. So I altered the carriers and left a signalman with the carrier, and went to approach the farm through the bushes and the shrubs and bits of wood. And we found a gun emplacement there, which had obviously been a gun emplacement of the Germans. And so I took a left flank position on top of where this farm then was down below, and we spread out, and obviously we thought the Germans were still in the farm, so we all got ready and rifles and Bren gun, and we started charging into the farm anyway. When we got down into the farm, the Germans had left the night before, we found out from the farmer. But there was one of our lads that they said that we'd learnt from them that they'd taken them prisoner, but one had been killed. And that one was Morris Pletz. That was the jockey lad. And he was buried there. They buried him in the farmyard.
The Germans had.
And, pardon?
The Germans had.
Well, I don't know whether they made his own do it. You see, because Lieutenant Lacks and one or two more was with him. So, whether his own done it, but he was buried there. They buried him and they put a cross at the head of the grave. So, as far as I were concerned, he was the only one who had got killed in the carrier platoon. He was the first one who I knew had got killed. Others might have done or might have died from the injuries, but he was the one who I first learned had got killed. So, and of course they'd taken the prisoners back and had cleared the area of the Germans, so we went back down the hill, and there was another farm in the plain land below, so we decided to investigate that. And I remember Sergeant Dunne took two or three with him, and I said, wait and I'll give you covering fire as you advance if there's any fire. So he did, but there was no fire, and there was just the usual Arab there and with his family and what have you, and they were clear, so the whole place were clear. And we never contacted the commando, number one commandos, and it getting towards nightfall, and we could see one of us carriers, which had been the Germans, after taking in Lieutenant Lacks and his party clear, had gone to the carrier, booby trapped it, blew it, and chucked it, tipped it over on the side of the road, and it had rolled down the hill and at the bottom. So that was one of us carriers which was doomed. But then we came back and reported that what had happened. And after that, we of course we hadn't an officer left. One or two days elapsed. I remember us Stukas coming over. We got. Dive bomb with the Stukas, but they dive bombed half a mile away to where we were, so they came screaming down and bombing, and nobody were there, so they got the wrong target. But they came over on a couple of mornings, I think it was. Around about twice we saw them, and then we assembled a sort of composite platoon. And we got his different orders to go and defend different hills. I got an officer from, he was an officer in the Inniskinnen Fusiliers. I don't remember his name now, but he came to me and he said that he hadn't much experience of what we do coming out of the Inniskillings, he says, so you carry on what we have to do. So we went on to this particular hillside, and we dug trenches and buried ourselves in, and I set them all in the positions, and we saw down below tanks coming up, and there were tanks coming from the other area as well, so we were able to witness a tank battle. I understood, I don't know how true it was, but I understood that these particular tanks of ours had been, the first one had been fitted with the bigger 4-pounder gun, not the 2-pounders which were on the Churchill, but they'd converted, at least, they must have been in converting them when they were called into action. So the first one had got the big 4-pounder on. So he came up in front, and of course Germans were coming down with the Tigers tanks, and the first bang, and he saw the Tiger one out, then next bang, and he saw another one off. So the Tigers turned round and were off back from where they'd come from. So that's what we saw of that, and it was during the time that we was there that I passed out, and then I'd been having trouble with my stomach, and I'd put it off as stomach ache, and that's it, you know, as you get, but it was more powerful because it was getting worse, and I absolutely, well, I passed out. Next thing I know, I was in the field ambulance, and they diagnosed me as no stomach lining or something, and so I wasn't there long before I landed up at 94th General in Algiers.
We'll talk about that in detail, but I just want to stay on the subject of the Saguenay battle and its aftermath. Now, when you moved back behind, you described the retreat behind the guards,
yeah,
and you were reassembled and so on. Your particular engagement in the battle was very successful.
Yes.
The other companies that suffered disastrous casualties. Now, when you were back with, you know, when you're all back together,
yeah,
what was the general opinion of what went wrong at Saguenay for the battalion?
Well, from my point of view, we knew the different companies had all had a nasty battery, and there were very few left who hadn't been taken prisoner or killed. The battalion was more or less in disarray, as you might say. It was non-existent, and all what was in my mind is what we had there was the rest of the battalion of 1,001 men. So that was my general opinion, and it seemed to be same all round, that they'd more or less wiped the battalion out for us few. But like I say, I didn't have a lot of communication or any notification of any of the company. It was just what we understood by the word which was going around what had happened. So it could be hearsay, and it could be the truth, but of course it was the truth. They did have a very nasty bashing.
Do you remember the new commanding officer coming in around about this time? Apparently there was commanding officer.
A new from then.
Yeah,
Well, it was Worrell at first, wasn't it?
I think so, yes.
It was Worrell who I knew very well.
Could you describe what you knew about him and how you encountered him?
Well, only encounter I had when I had to report about Captain Kirkup, and when I had to when I came back from the from in the hills, and it was in the officers' quarters, but I reported back with the 24 men. And then, of course, when we'd done the decoy job, I'd reported back to him in the in the forest, which was just below Sedgenane.
So Worrell was already there at that point? I'm
sure it was Worrell.
And
I don't know when he was changed. Of course, we don't. You don't get to know really. Just you find somebody else there different. That's all. It's not like when you're at home and all orders are put up and you can read everything. There's no such things when you're in a battle situation.
And Worrell, could you remember that was the first time you encountered Worrell? Then was when you came back from the hill.
Yeah, I should say that was Worrell. I don't know for certain that was his name, but I don't know. I'd encountered him before we'd gone up because I had to report about Captain Kirkup. And when I came back, of course, I reported to him because he was in the officer's mess when I reported that we'd brought back 24 stragglers and with his own men, and I'd been reported grenaded to death, but I encountered him again there. And then of course we went out on the decoy job, and he was there to set us off and put me in charge. So I know I'd been in conversation with him quite a bit, you see.
And was he the man that the officer that said that you were in charge of the decoy party?
Yeah,
the officers. And he was there right until you left the battalion?
As far as I know, he that was the man. Mm.
What about Captain Balance, Major Balance?
Major Balance,
You've talked about him. He was involved in the decoy action.
He wasn't on the hills with us, so he must have been back at HQ. He was on the decoy job, and then I didn't see a lot of him when we reformed behind the guards. I don't know whether he'd disappeared or gone on something or other, but I don't recall him after that.
So who was in charge of your composite company then, do you think?
I don't know who it was. I can't think who was in charge of the composite company. I know the colonel appeared like in the redout, what the citations and things like that.
That was Worrell.
And I should imagine that was Worrell. And I should imagine that was Worrell who he called me into his tent, wanted to see me, to recommend me as a potential officer. So I imagine that was Worrell, but whoever it was, I'd know him pretty well because I'd seen him on so many occasions.
But just within that period of the action, though.
Just within all that period, yes. So
now,
if it was him, then it was Worrell. But as far as I know, that's who the CO was at the time.
Now, when you got back behind the guards' defensive line, so you did manage to get some of the carriers out. Some of them did.
Oh yes, we got, well, most of the carriers must have pulled out. The drivers must have taken the carriers out before. The only carrier I saw coming out was with the brigadier in it. Well, whether it were one of ours or not, I don't know. But when we got to the where we were formed the composite company, we had some of the carriers there then.
What about the rest of the battalion's equipment, the transport and so on? Was that still intact?
Well, I don't know. I didn't see any of that. No.